It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are off and running on this, the 12th day of October 2020, Moran Monday in October, the second Moran Monday of October 2020. Hi, I'm Bob. And we're going to have plenty of stupidity to get into this evening because, among other things, there was a great big meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee today, which being as it's run by Republicans, had multiple opportunities for moranity. Had some chicken tikka masala for dinner, and the rice went down the wrong way. Sorry. Lots of moranity opportunities. What it boils down to is the deck is stacked, the cards are marked, the dice are loaded, the brakes on the roulette wheel, and the fix is in. And they will get them, barring some sort of a miracle, you know, like a constitutional scholar Mike Lee and North Carolina Senator Thom Tillis winding up horizontally crucified on a vent. They're going to get their Supreme Court justice. And they'll get it in the most rank and partisanly political fashion possible. And then, oh, Jubilee Day, Republicans will be able to screw tens of millions of Americans and send them toward their grim and dusty death. As is the preference of the death cult known as the Republican Party. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so thanks go out over the course of the weekend to our subscribers who help keep this program on the air in a big way. Thanks to Gary in New York. Thank you to Paul. Thank you to our friends at West Mesa Photography. Thank you to Christopher. Thank you to Tony and Chico. Thank you to John. Thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you to Ryan, who jumped in and did a half a show on me. Thank you, Ryan. Again, thanks to Paul from Parts Unknown. Judy, thank you. Daniel, thank you. So all we've got to do is come up with $100 this evening, and we're okay for this Monday, which would be fantastic. 10 at 10, 1 at 100, et cetera. And that'll take us into tomorrow as we face another week of massive bill paying. Keep the program on the air as we head toward, what is it now? Exactly 12 days from our 15th anniversary here 15 years in this particular format, and then the three extra in front of that. So, wow. That still blows my mind. Anyway, it is Moran Monday. And merciful God, ain't we got Morans? Yeah, we do. Where to even begin? Well, let's see. We can start with Mike Lee. Mike Lee of Utah, the constitutional scholar, who decided to be his own little personal super spreader today in the Senate Judiciary Committee. He has the Rona. It's not in question. He has the Rona. We know he has the Rona. And some doctor somewhere said, well, you know, he's not a transmission risk anymore. Yeah, you can believe that at your peril. And so he came swanning into the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing room today. He wore a mask for a little bit, LARPed and smollocked around on some of his Republican colleagues, and then took his mask off and started speechifying and spraying droplets and aerosolized particles of viruses and all over the room. And sat there and grinned and all shucks with Lindsey Graham. My God. You got to wonder what kind of super spreader is going to come out of this hearing. Yeah. It's a mess. And if it weren't so damn dangerous, it would be silly. And, of course, the Democrats are framing this because they've been cowed by the Republicans away from talking about what a religious maniac. The Democrats aren't allowed to talk about the fact that Amy Tony's Parrott is a theocrat and a cult member. Nope, can't do that. Wouldn't be fair. She'd probably cry. Mike Lee would cry. Josh Hawley of Missouri would cry. Everybody would cry. So we're going to frame this as a matter of what's being done to healthcare and the important and why the Republicans want to have her in that seat by November the 10th so she can vote alongside at least four other maggot judges. That would be Ann's boy Neil and Sammy Bad Breath Alito and Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas and Brat Kavanaugh to take health care away from 20 plus million Americans in the middle of a pandemic. And just because every time we do something like this, a story pops up to illustrate it to perfection. Well, here we go. A story out of Wisconsin. Black Earth, Wisconsin. It's the story of a woman by the name of Linda Flansburg. Linda was 54 years old. You'll notice I've just used the past tense. She passed away on September the 29th. Having spent, for instance, years and years giving of her time to her community. She worked a concession stand, volunteered a concession stand for the little local amateur baseball team. The concession stand was festooned with signs that she had made herself. For a Freezy Pop, or a hot dog, or $3 for a brat. Well, Linda Flansburgh and her husband Joe both got the coronavirus. And neither of them went to the doctor. Why? Because they couldn't afford the medical bills. Her uncle, Kenneth Lind, said of his niece and nephew, "For 2 weeks they coughed and wheezed and looked at each other, alone, sequestered in quarantine with their three dogs. And on the 14th day of quarantine, Joe went to the store to buy dog food. And when he came back, Linda Flansburgh, 54 years old, was dead." Mr. Lind said, "What has been denied is the beauty of a person giving of themselves to other people, putting a smile on their face, doing small things for other people that other people never would have done." Here's the eulogy they gave of her. "This is the story of Linda and Joe, middle-class Americans, fellow Badgers, simply trying to make it through this thing called life. The challenges of living the American dream had made it difficult. Joe, a carpenter, tried it on his own and got hammered by the recession of 2007. Linda worked for a national finance company for over 25 years until one day they announced that her job was moving to Texas because it's cheaper down there. Linda and Joe, struggling to pay the mortgage, struggling to pay their fair share of taxes, looking for corners to cut, costs to shave, expenses to defer, trying to find health insurance they could afford and doing so only with high deductibles and astronomical copays. Linda and Joe, with Linda taking a second job, tending bar in a place where social distancing was difficult and one of them might have gotten the coronavirus and then the other. Too financially strained to go to the doctor, too afraid to go to the hospital for fear that their share of the cost would result in the American dream becoming the American nightmare. They wrote it out alone at home. For 2 weeks, they coughed and wheezed and looked at each other alone, sequestered and quarantined with their three dogs, doing everything they could simply to survive. With each day, they seemed a little better. With each day, the sunshine brighter. With each day, hope entered back into their lives that tomorrow would be better than today. On the 14th day, September 29th, 2020, Joe finally felt strong enough to leave the house, only for a few minutes, just to buy some food for the dogs. When he returned, Linda was gone. Her heart had stopped, and she was alone with her three babies lying by her side. At age 54, Linda became number 206,001. $210,000 now. And God alone knows how many stories identical or near to identical to those of Linda Flansburgh there are. She died because they couldn't get medical care. Because their insurance was bullshit, such as it was. And the Republican Party are holding hearings right now to put a judge on a bench to even take away that shitty coverage. There's only one answer to all of this. Vote. Kamala Harris was right last week. Vote. Vote like your life depends on it, because it does. I imagine Linda Flansburgh didn't even get a chance to vote to save the lives of others. Vote. Vote, vote, vote. And thanks to sex scandals in North Carolina, a narrowing race in Michigan, well, retaking the Senate is not a foregone conclusion. My God. These homicidal maniacs, these Republicans. They can think of nothing but how to make other people hurt more. Mercy. By the way, I neglected to mention, if you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live, run on by to run on by headon.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you never have before, and jump right in, and you'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy Steve from Georgistan. Howdy, Anatole. It's a fun time. And in telling the Linda Flansburgh story, it reminded me of something else that hit a lot closer to home over the weekend. We have lost a beloved member of our community in a horrible, horrible way. Many of you will remember our dear friend Juanita down Florida way. Well, Juanita has made her way in this world by grit and determination. And the pride and joy of her life is her son, Charles. And Charles died this weekend. Charles was dedicated to his mother in ways that you can only describe but not fully imagine. His mama was his world. And so he had fixed up if I'm telling it wrong, if I make any mistakes, I apologize. They're not intentional. The information I received was heartbreaking and not a lot of detail, but just enough to give one a sense of how awful this truly was. He'd fixed himself up a place to sleep in a shed so he could be close to his mama. And the shed caught fire. And Charles died in that fire. Our dear sister Jude in the Great Northwest told me about this over the weekend. And when I got her email, my heart just sunk. Juanita is a dear human being, and Charles was too. And I'm sure I speak for the entire Horn Family Community congregation when I say that our hope, our heart goes out to Juanita, and that we share with her all the love we have to give and all the comfort. And only hope that her grief can be somewhat, just somewhat assuaged. By the happy memories she has of her son. Friends on Twitter and via email sending their condolences. Thank you. And I trust that Jude will pass this along to Juanita. I imagine she's not listening, and nor would I don't. But we love you, Juanita. And not only did Juanita lose her son, she lost her home. the shed was behind her home. It burned and her home burned. God, God, God. Peace to you, Juanita. Just awful. Just awful. Of course, today, for reasons passing understanding in what should be a more enlightened age, but turns out isn't, today is Columbus Day. Also remarked upon as Indigenous Peoples Day in this country, although not official. And consequently, I got this. Bob! Yes, it is once again Moran Monday, and the morons are out in full force as usual with how they're all going to take up arms if their dictator, Evita Covita, is not reelected. Yes, Evita Covita was again stumping and performing his theatrics on a balcony with a paid crowd wearing their silly red hats. That's right, this crowd did not pay to get in to see Trump on the balcony, but according to sources, many of them were paid and given the red hats to watch Trump perform at the White House. However, even with King COVID currency, the lawn crowd was light. And the devotees of Nitwit Nero, well, they were promised a 30-minute harangue by the harangutan. He didn't even make it 18 minutes. They're probably weaning him off the dexamethasone at this point. And that can be an ugly Jones. Joey continues, I must say that it was fascinating during the debate last week watching actual maggots evolution into a fly because the maggot was upset about the 12-foot distancing rule. Yes, upon landing in Pence's hair, the fly, according to Nielsen ratings, actually garnered better ratings and more appeal than anything Pence preached. His prattle insisting that Scalia Amy Coney Barrister receives respect and respectful hearing starting on Columbus Day flew right out the door after the way Pence disrespectfully treated both Senator Harris and the moderator Susan Page. Ironically, the black fly landed in Pence's hair immediately after Pence claimed there is no institutional racism in this country. What's that, Giraffrey? Giraffrey says, somebody should take Mother and Mike and race them to an institution. Considering it is Columbus Day, I asked a moron this morning to name the ships of which Columbus sailed. They responded, the Dodge Neon. No, I think you mean the Nina. The Ford Pinto. No, I think you mean the Pinta. The Pinta. And I can't remember the one that went over the edge. Yes, the Flat Earth Society. Moran maggots are alive and well. I think by now everyone knows that Columbus didn't discover America. It's kind of hard to discover a place that's already got more people on it than the rest of the planet combined. But rather landed somewhere near modern-day Haiti and raped, murdered, and tortured and turned what was left of the native people of that region into slaves. Leif Erikson and the Minnesota Vikings were believed to be the first to come from Europe. And they met up with the Native Americans, Kansas City Chiefs, and they played football and held the first turkey dinner in approximately 1000 A.D. No, it didn't quite work out that way. No, the Norse referred to them, and this is pre-gunpowder, remember, so it was a little bit more of a fair fight. The Norsemen referred to them, the locals, merely as skrælings, and had about all they could stand of them, and then turned around and said, Vinland ain't worth it. Joey continues, yes, by all accounts, Christopher Columbus was a horrible human being, and unfortunately now there are some horrible human beings in Columbus, Ohio, which sadly the capital of Ohio named after the aforementioned Christopher Columbus. Starting with the governor and his horrible draconian legislation involving women's rights, Lieutenant Governor Husted, who spent nearly all of his time kicking minorities off the voting rolls, as nearly a million people have been kicked off Ohio's voting rolls since 2011, and now the Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, is trying to lahose voters by having only one ballot box in each county. In a 2-1 vote, the U.S. Sixth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals granted a stay of a Cleveland district judge's order instructing LaRose to permit multiple drop boxes. By the way, the two judges who granted the stay were George W. Bush and Donald Trump appointees. What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe says,
according to the ruling, the two dissenting judges claimed there are other remedies for voting and one drop box in each county is sufficient.
Oh, you mean like mailing in your vote with 600 sorting machines uninstalled or waiting in hours-long lines and risk getting COVID?
I, Jeffrey the Giraffe, am not sure of all the options to vote, but I do know of one way to tell the Sixth Circuit Court to go fuck off, and I think I just did.
This has been Joey's Journal for More in Monday, the 12th day of October, with Giraffe singing the Ballad of the Ballot Box Blues. Well done, Giraffe. Well done. Well done. So, That's a start to the program. And thank you to Women Standing. And thank you to Jack in Shreveport. And thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. We got $35 to finish fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly. Maybe we'll get that taken care of in short order. That'd be wonderful. Darlene with a note says, yeah, so what happened with all those arrows in the house's quiver that Nancy kind of sort of promised us? Now might be a good time to start firing them off, Nan. Maybe? Just maybe? Well, yeah. And not the least of which, a call for the impeachment of Bill... Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr. It's rather a nasty bit of business. A group of experts in government ethics, having called for his impeachment, and noting his lawless activities. Well, that would be one of those arrows, wouldn't it? Trying to find the story now. Oh, in a minute. Well, doggone it. But that would be one of those things that could slow things to a crawl. But I doubt they could get him impeached in time to stop the floor vote. At present, there is talk of trying to deny the Republicans a quorum for this dirty bit of business they're trying to do. But that's a matter of mathematics and simple counting. And frankly, it doesn't look good. Oh, and by the way, when Mike Lee brought his pal, the coronavirus, with him to the Senate today, no one, and it was remarked upon by a couple of different senators, no one was provided the necessary information as to whether or not Mike Lee had tested negative. And of course, we're waiting on testing results. Still waiting on testing results for Nitwit Nero. What did Scott in San Diego call him? Dr. Dreamy Buns? Dr. Sean Connolly issued a memo to Press Secretary Kaylee Maganini saying, in response to your inquiry regarding... Wait, that sounds like Giraffrey, doesn't it? That's no fair to Giraffrey. In response to your inquiry regarding the president's most recent COVID-19 tests, I can share with you that he has tested negative on consecutive days using the Abbott Binax Now antigen card. Evidence indicates a lack of detectable viral replication. This comprehensive data, in concert with the CDC's guidelines for removal of transmission-based precautions, have informed our medical team's assessment that the president is not infectious to others. He was in the air at the time, COVID Caligula was, headed to a rally in Florida. And you believe that information. Well, but the maggots, well, they'll believe anything. Gullible sorts. Yeah. And here we go again. Photos coming out from Georgistan this morning. Very similar to what happened in 2018. There are, a reporter named Tyler Estep for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution posted a 70-second video to Twitter that shows a huge line to get into a single polling station in Suwanee, Georgia, in Gwinnett County. The population of Suwanee, Georgia, is less than 21,000. And the ballot, the line to cast a ballot was already four hours long. This is video shot from a car driving down the length of the line of people waiting to vote, trying to social distance, and many of them wearing their masks, so we know probably which way these people would like to vote, because we live in a country where masks are political statements now. Like I said, the video is 70 seconds long and runs the length of the waiting line. It is every bit probably of a half a mile long. You know, you'd almost think that Governor Brian Kemp, formerly Secretary of State Brian Kemp, didn't like the idea of people being able to vote. Because the line's not exactly moving either. Man, that's worse than the line at Tudor's Biscuit World this morning. Tyler Estep, the reporter, said, I talked to several voters who've been there since 7 and were still waiting as 11 a.m. approached. They were told check-in was being glitchy. And then a spokesperson for Gwinnett County said that there was an intermittent issue with network access that slowed processing down. Maybe you wouldn't want, maybe just maybe. You should do like hard copy and books instead of the interweb tubes. Jim Sciuto pointed out, I haven't seen lines like this to vote in any other country I've lived in. Well, maybe other other countries actually like for their people to participate in the democratic process. One individual pointing out, this is what voter suppression looks like in Georgia. It should not be this hard to vote, but these determined Georgians must endure hours in line. Hashtag vote blue. We're with you, Georgia. Hang in there. Democracy does not mean make it harder to vote, but corrupt GOP thinks this is okay. No, it's not just okay. It's the desired outcome, for God's sakes. It's not a flaw, it's a feature, for God's sakes. Oof. And the maggots, of course, are getting a little glitchy, I guess, in their own right. Yeah. For instance, Bakersfield, California, where there was an altercation between Trump supporters and decent human beings. And on that particular corner, they've been selling their merch, their maggot stuff, their Biden stuff. Erica Harris, a progressive activist, says, my first week doing this, I've been maced. I've been hit in the back of my head with a flagpole. My friend's been hit in the back of her head with a flagpole. I've had my address posted. Then a maggot walked her dog past a table that had progressive activists seated at it. Erica Harris said she was allowing her dog to sniff all of our stuff. It kept going towards our table, so my friend tried to push her dog out of the way. Another supporter came up and started yelling that we'd shoved her dog. One maggot said, I know exactly who started it. A guy from BLM kicked a service dog. Everything was fine. Everyone was talking back and forth till he kicked the dog. Once he kicked the dog, that's when things got heated, and that's when the fight started. So the maggot punched the progressive activist in the face. And the cops are still trying to find the maggot in question. Yeah. It's going to be zany. It's going to be creepy. Because the Oath Keepers, you're familiar with them now. We have been on this program for quite some time. Stuart Rhodes, the head of the Oath Keepers, says, we're going to be out on election day to protect people who are voting. And then another group of QAnon goonies has been using the social media platform Telegram to say that there would be heavily armed MAGA patriots on election day. One Oath Keeper wrote, I want nothing more than to stand down and live in peace. But if it goes bad, God forgive me for what I do when they force my hand. It's not going to end. These people, and I hate saying it, are going to have to be stopped. Is President Trump going to, with the aid of the proper authorities, arrest them, or are we, the people, going to have to get involved? And down at the Southern Poverty Law Center, Cassie Miller says that chances are really high we're going to see militia members, armed groups, or Trump supporters who are armed at the polls. Somebody, now explain that to me, please. How is it legal to take a damn gun to the voting booth? Cassie Miller adding, not only are these people willing to participate in voter intimidation, but they're hoping to create this chaotic moment. There's an unwillingness to accept anything but a Trump victory. Well, you know, carrying guns to polling places, there's nothing, nefarious about that. I mean, yeah, they're just protecting. Yeah, right, sure. Oh, a network access issue slowed vote processing in Georgia. Brother Deacon Asa points out, in related news, this, Dateline today, Microsoft disrupts Russia-linked hacker network that posed threat to elections. Yeah, just try to get the Republicans to do something about that. Not as long as the checks keep clearing. Yeah, it was... There have been some weirdnesses. Woke up Saturday morning to find out our internet was down all day long. Apparently, you can take Shentel out by cutting a single cable. And that was probably some Crystal Methodist out there trying to figure out how to steal some copper. And wait a minute, this ain't copper. Yeah. The Russian malware network was TrickBot. And they were aiming for the infrastructure of the presidential election. It's a network of a million hijacked computers run by the Russian mob. Microsoft says they are the most prolific distributors of ransomware in the world. So Microsoft has apparently at least slowed or interrupted that process. Randy in PA points out, they claim to have a negative test on COVID Caligula, but no word on melanoma's Rona status. That's curious. It is, Randy. They're very curious indeed. You know, the Rona can be rough on the kidneys. I'm just saying. Steve in New York, a little bit of Latin for us. Anus horribilis. In all seriousness, when will this end? This is the long national and ongoing nightmare. Well, and that's that. You know, when you get around New Year's Eve, everybody gets all misty-eyed, and the old year is portrayed as a tired old man, near unto death, heading home to be replaced by a chubby, happy baby. New Year. I think that that metaphor is toast. The only thing that provides us with anything resembling hope is if we can take the presidency, keep the House, and take the Senate. Then we know we have a fighting chance of correcting the myriad and manifest evils and errors of the past 4 years. Honestly and earnestly, I don't even want to think about how I'm going to respond if we cannot eject COVID Caligula from the White House. Steve in New York points out, voted for Trump? You're a fucking idiot. This is what a mask I have says. My dad has asked me not to wear it. I was wearing it occasionally. Now I'm going to wear it everywhere I can. You know why? Because I want someone to try and hit me. I want someone to mess with me. You know why? And I'm going to use my gay privilege here. I want to look down at the maggot whose face I beat in and say to him, go tell your hive that a faggot beat the shit out of you. Bob, I'm not violent. I have not in 50 years ever been in a fight. But I am sick and damn tired of these people. They want to traffic in fear. I will gladly give it right back. Well, please stay safe, Steve. Oh, Oh, and by the way, in Ohio, Joey and Giraffe were talking about ballot issues. Thomas Jug of Punch says, and Summit County's absentee ballots are still delayed. Of course they are. Yeah. Oh, and in Michigan, where one of those constitutional sheriffs says he's not sure that the people who plotted to kidnap and maybe even execute Governor Gretchen Whitmer were doing anything wrong, where where a court has stepped in to say that it's not all right to try to stop the spread of the fucking disease. Well, at 70 K through 12 schools in the state of Michigan, and at 29 colleges in the state of Michigan, more than 5,000 Michiganders have been infected by the coronavirus in new and ongoing outbreaks at schools. That, according to the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, including 346 students. And staff at outbreaks in 46 schools serving preschoolers through high school. Thank you, Merle. They also include outbreaks involving before and after school programs. 4,862 of the cases involve outbreaks on or around 29 college campuses. Jesus. Freedom! Wolverines! Right. Megan says, living in Virginia, I voted early on September 18th, but I took election week off to visit my mother in Delaware. I'll be escorting her to the polls early on November 3rd, and I plan on doing so with mace and an ear-splitting alarm. I'm having serious doubts about even doing that because, A, I don't know if the cops will be there to stop me, and B, what the hell are those going to do against a gun? Mom still lives in southern Delaware. It's a very red county and surrounded by people who support the Second Amendment. Wish us luck, Megan says. Well, you'll need more than luck, Megan. You've got to practice situational awareness on that day and start by practicing it before then. Take note of your surroundings. Take note of avenues of escape. And try to go at a time when maybe the polls won't be quite so busy. And maybe being a very red, very white county, there won't be any problems voting at all for your mom. It's kind of weird for me, too, because, like I said, Agnes and I, we've already voted. We're done. And now we just sit back and wait. Wait to see if the rest of the if the rest of the country can manifest enough brains to try to save what's left of us. Yep. As to the jammed through nomination of Amy Toney's parrot, Flavio says, and we'll be ruled by the Confederacy for the next 40 years. Fuck that noise. Yeah. And of course, make no mistake, she is a wild-eyed theocrat, Amy Toney's parrot. She gave her opening statement today. And she told this, and she's told it before, this story about whenever I make a decision, I look at it as if I'm the person that I'm ruling against. And I ask myself, how would I feel? I ask myself, how would my children feel if that was one of my children I was ruling against? Oh, lady. you wouldn't rule against your children. At least not if your children were corporations, people too, human beings, my friend. No. What a sack of shit. As NARAL Pro-Choice America President Elise Hogue said, two things are clear. Barrett poses a clear and present danger to our fundamental rights, and this hearing is part of an illegitimate and craven power grab that could affect our courts for a long time. Bit of an understatement, that. Hogue added today, plowing ahead with the confirmation of a Supreme Court justice this close to Election Day is an attack on our democracy that we won't forget. It's disgraceful for Senate Republicans to continue this partisan charade to maintain control no matter the respects of November's election, all while refusing to help people struggling in the midst of the still-raging pandemic. No confirmation should be considered until after Inauguration Day, period. Cory Booker, in his opening statement, said, I'm really glad that my colleagues who contracted COVID-19 at the Rose Garden Super Spreader event had access to the care you and your families needed. This stands in contrast to the people who will come through here today to wipe down the desks and empty the garbage, that will vacuum the floor, like people all over our country who are working today and cannot show up to work sick. Donald Trump and most of my Senate Republican colleagues know the truth. They will not be able to get away with this after the American people have spoken in this election. Nothing about this is normal. And so today we got some new information on the life, if you can call it that, cycle of the coronavirus. It is not encouraging. Oh, no. It's downright frightening. According to Agence France-Presse, the coronavirus can live on paper money and cell phones, things like that, in cool, dark conditions, for up to 28 days. The scientists discovered that at 68 degrees Fahrenheit, SARS-CoV-2 is extremely robust on smooth surfaces like mobile phone screens and survives for 28 days on glass, steel, and plastic banknotes. When the temperature goes up to 86 degrees Fahrenheit, the survival rate drops to 7 days and drops to just 24 hours at 40 degrees Celsius, 104 degrees Fahrenheit. But that's not a good sign with winter coming on. Oh, no. So what does this mean for wiping and swabbing and... Now that we know that it can be aerosolized and airborne, and 6 feet ain't enough. Yeah, our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown was prescient, wasn't he? When he said 6 feet won't get it. You need to be 10 or 13, 16 feet. Right. Keep using those bleach wipes. Yeah. Keep wearing your gloves. Keep disinfecting everything. And I guess a Clorox wipe is okay on your phone. I don't know. But we do know one thing. Now, the Republicans don't care at all. Of course, there's Nitwit Nero. I don't know what time his rally is this evening in Florida. But the fact of the matter is, in a place like Florida, this is going to be nothing but a super spreader event. Wow. What else? Hey. Yeah. A maggot has gotten nasty with her neighbors for having the temerity to put up a yard sign for Joe Biden. Right.
Hello, can I help you?
I want to talk to you. This is Elba. I want to show you something.
I'm sorry, I can't come to the door right now.
Get out your neighborhood bylaw. It's section 5.20. No signs shall be in the yard. If you don't take this Harris Biden shit down,
yes,
I will sue you.
Right,
and I was going to have you sell my house, but that's not going to happen now, and you're going to lose a lot of business because of this crap. You get out your neighborhood association bylaws, section 5.20.
I'll talk to Corey.
You got that? It's right there in section 5.20. Can't have no signs. And everybody knows that the neighborhood bylaws is way more powerful and important than that First Amendment freedom of speech thingy. Now, if he's having a Trump sign, I wouldn't even be here, because that's patriotic. That's a good Christian thing to do. Mm-hmm. But this Biden Harris shit has got to go. God, these people. Can't even abide the sight of a sign. Freedom! Right?
Thank you, Mr. President, for taking off the mask. Thank you.
There won't be a transfer.
For threatening America with violence when you lose.
Stand back and stand by.
Demanding only your votes are counted. For trying to rig this election and intimidate voters. For embracing the tactics of the tyrants you admire. For trying to use those tactics against the American people. Thank you for making sure every American knows exactly who and what you are. Because we're perfectly aware. You aren't joking, and you aren't trolling anyone.
Can't tell a joke with these people.
The future you and your pet senators want is just as it appears. But your time is nearly up. Your legacy and your place in history awaits. A legacy of failure, a blight on our history. Defeat is coming. Accountability is coming. We are coming.
That's the latest from the Lincoln Project. Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Oh, and speaking of maggots and the like, a story coming out of here in Almost Level West by Coltrump Genustan. Do you remember back during the Cool Kids Clavern? That's all K's. The Republican National Committee back in August. Well, it featured a woman named Amy Ford speaking. She's a nurse, and she was defending Nitwit Nero's response to the pandemic. Apparently, she also goes by Amy Johnson. Well, WSAC-TV in Charleston noted that she's also identified as Amy Thorne. She's been charged with malicious or unlawful assault after she shot a woman in the belly in Williamson, West Virginia. The victim identified as Jonda Whitt. Of course, the maggot is claiming she acted in self-defense. Fortunately, the victim's wounds are not life-threatening. Mingo County, where she's from, Williamson is the county seat. I've mentioned that my grandmother was born in Mingo County in a little coal camp called Naugatuck in, I think, 1904. But she went from Mingo County to treat COVID patients in New York City when there was a desperate need for more healthcare workers. And it turned out she's a maggot. So at the Cool Kids Clavern, she said, "President Trump recognized the threat this virus presented for all Americans early on and made rapid policy changes. As a healthcare professional, I can tell you without hesitation, Donald Trump's quick action leadership shaped thousands of lives during COVID-19, and the benefits of that response extend far beyond coronavirus." Of course, then the tapes came out from Bob Woodward that showed that he deliberately, you know, downplayed it. But she got home, and the nickname of Mingo County is, of course, was during the Cold Wars, Matewan. We've talked about the movie Matewan and the Matewan Massacre, the Matewan Shootout. Matewan is in Bloody Mingo. And that's its nickname, Bloody Mingo. So, gut shot and Bloody Mingo. I reckon Amy Ford or Amy Thorne or Amy Johnson is out on bond. Yeah. So they're gathering together, previously mentioned. They're gathering together at the super spreader event down in Florida. I'm looking at a photo now. Orlando Sanford International Airport. They got one of those great big desecrated American flags with the black and white stripes and one blue stripe. Yeah, they care so much about the flag. You know, we got to have flag burn amendments, what we got to have, until they decide to desecrate it themselves. The crowd gathering together, butthole to belly button, no masks to be seen, LARPing and smolicking and grabulating and lollygagging, spewing and spraying and hooting and barking and grunting all over each other. Nitwit Nero, once again, not wearing a mask. Good, keep not wearing one. Jim Acosta pointing out very few supporters wearing masks, including many senior citizens not wearing masks. No social distancing, according to Mark Knoller. White supremacist adjacent illegitimate Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis showed up for the rally. He didn't wear a mask either. Florida lawyer Daniel Ulfelder said DeSantis has arrived maskless at super spreader event, giving high fives before ending with a nose rub, P. pick. Really? A nose? I'm not picking. I'm scratching. You were picking. Yeah, he's got... Oh, there we go. Yeah, there's the... No word on whether Rapalito Eduardo Cruz has provided any master class level on what to do after the rub scratch pick. Ooh. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's see. Lou says, I'm thinking of starting a non-political podcast. I have to buy an IC that is Apple GarageBand compatible. What kind of mic do you use? I use the broadcast standard. There are two mics that are used in talk radio primarily. One is the Electrovoice RE20, and the other is the Shure SM7B. There's also Rode makes a fantastic mic that's very similar to the RE20. And if you want to, what I recommend is an RE20 or the Rode microphone, and this Rodecaster Pro mixer. It's just made things ever so much easier. Kyle says, Kyle in Kentucky, Stan, nothing like some good old American freedom, is there? And that's freedumb. Kyle noting, they scream about desecration of the flag, then they wear the flag around as clothing. Also, these maggots are bound to kill each other off by the time the election rolls around. And so much for dinner. Yeah, the Ron Monkey up Declantis nose rub pick grab dig probably did do dinner in. Yeah. It's okay, Bob, says Lee in New York. I know most of the rally attendees do not wear masks, but how many wore hoods? Oh, down there? Apparently they left them home. It's still kind of warm, but yeah. Hoods. Oh, phone disinfecting tip from Steve in New York. I use a spray bottle of 70% alcohol on a microfiber towel rag. It's good for disinfecting and cleans it well to boot. So I guess it doesn't get in through the finer... Well, it's supposed to be not waterproof, but most modern phones are water-resistant, so maybe... Yeah. Yeah, adding to the there goes dinner aspect, Ron, death sentence, wasn't picking, he was harvesting. Yes, I know, there goes dinner. Harvesting. Right. As to the maggot at the door, at rule 5.20, the maggot neighbor notes, she said, Steve points out, that Harris Biden shit. You know what she really wanted to say about Senator Harris and our next vice president? Yeah, unfortunately I do. I do. And so, since it is Moran Monday, we have more. We've got more Moranity. Let's check in out west, where the head of the Bureau of Land Management, at least according to one judge, isn't the head of the Bureau of Land Management. William Perry Pendley is a diehard maggot. I have the support of the president. I have the support of the Secretary of the Interior, and my job is to get out and get things done to accomplish what the president wants to do. Well, he's been head of the Bureau of Land Management a little over a year because he was temporarily assigned to the post by the Interior Secretary. But the problem is, in July 2020, he was formally tapped for the post, but the White House withdrew the nomination when congressional Democrats and Republicans said, nah, don't think so. Said they wouldn't support it. So this is another one of those moments where we find out just how exposed, how fractured our constitutional system is. When they withdrew the nomination, that should have been the end of it, right? Because this Pendley character is a real Lulu. He's one of those idiots that thinks that our public lands should be sold off to the highest corporate bidder. And so he was hailed into court, and a federal judge 2 weeks ago declared that Pendley's services at BLM were unlawful. He had served unlawfully for 424 days. Moreover, the judge added that his decisions should be thrown out or reversed. And then Pendley simply refused to vacate the post. Yeah. Among other things, he makes fun of killing endangered species, Pendley does. Talking to a bunch of maggots and right-wingers in North Carolina, he said, out west we say shoot, shovel, and shut up when it comes to the discovery of endangered species on your property. Shoot, shovel, and shut up. And so he should have to leave. But he says, nope, not gonna. Ain't gonna leave. The judge has made his ruling. Now let him enforce it. Yeah. Because who's going to, you know, what are we going to do about it? Right? Jesus. Hey, thank you, Colin. Thank you very kindly indeed. We are done with fundraising for this evening. Thank you very much. That takes a weight off my mind. Off to a good start. Kyle says, Jesus, they can't even appoint the assholes to destroy everything correctly. Also, why is he still there if he's illegal there illegally? What the fuck? Because nobody can go in and take him out. Well, it's time to go, sir. Oh, no, I ain't leaving. Oh, okay. Bye now. The system only works if you have faith in the system. Funny, isn't it? Oh, and this is just a technical note, but I had some... I had word over the weekend that people were having a hard time downloading the podcast over at White Rose Society. Please use Podbean for the time being. I'll let you know when it's okay to go back. Somehow or another, I screwed up the archive at White Rose. And I don't know what I did, but Ben's working on it, and hopefully he'll get it fixed, and I won't ever do that again. But, yeah, just use Podbean for the podcast for the time being. Oh, that's a good question. And the question being, Are we still a smoke-free show, Bob? Yes, Jeremy in Vermont, we are. In point of fact, we are this day smoke-free for 28 days. 4 full weeks. Without a cigarette. It just kind of blows my mind. I don't know about yours, but I really didn't think I had it in me. But when you're dedicated and motivated, sometimes you can surprise yourself. 28 days, 4 full weeks, a month without a cigarette, and I'm surprised at myself, and so grateful to all of you for your encouragement as I have made this little journey. I have to say, says Steve in New York, it's been tough, but I have to give the Horn family a small pat on the back for being pretty good at keeping up with fundraising. Keep it up, folks. We need each other right now. Oh, yeah. We absolutely do. There's 19 days to the 1st of November, so what, 22 days, a week and a 3 weeks and a day to get us to Election Day. And we need to be thinking some, how are we going to handle election night? There's probably not going to be a lot to be said about results or outcomes or anything in the hours that this program is live, 5 to 8. But I think we will probably have a front porch that evening so that we can just sort of cover all the myriad skullduggery that'll be taking place all over the country. Yeah. So be thinking along those lines. Well, thank you, Kyle. Kyle says, congratulations, Bob, and if you can do it, maybe I can. I know you can, Kyle. And don't be afraid to use to have a little help along the way. These nicotine pouches have made it a more tolerable experience than it would otherwise have been. And it's not quite as nasty as the gum, and doesn't provide the David Lynch home movies, the Fellini home movies, in your dreams like the patches do. And it beats the hell out of just sitting and shaking and going cold turkey. It amazes me when I think back to my mom quitting. There were no lozenges or patches or anything then. She had a bag of Brock's butterscotch candies and a determination not to smoke, and that's how she quit and stayed quit. Congrats on a month, Bob, says Jeremy. Keep up the hard work. I won't lie. The silence made me wonder for a second. No, it's just, I don't know. I think I'm a little slow this evening. Just listening to all of this bullshit today, the opening statements in the Amy Tony's Parrot hearings. You know, sometimes they fill me up with a sort of righteous anger. Other times they just make, they're just exhausting. Just lies after lies after lies after lies from these godforsaken Republicans. And it just, it weighs you down. And this was one of those days. Yeah. Darlene says, I agree with Steve on disinfecting. I use 1/3 70% isopropyl alcohol, 2/3 distilled water mixture, or straight isopropyl if I'm too lazy to mix, along with a microfiber cloth to wipe everything down. I even use that on my wheelchair controllers, toggle, and armrests. But you don't need to leave the mixture on that long at all, just spray and wipe. I have a pretty watertight OtterBox protective cover for the iPhone, so that protects the phone itself. I'm more likely to damage the phone by dropping it than by spraying it with cleaner or even wiping with Clorox wipes that I will use on these items as well. From today's hearings, I now know where all the Clorox wipes have gone to. Congress! Did you notice, Bob? It seemed that every senator had his or her side a large container of Clorox wipes. I think the government has bought all that inventory up, leaving us commoners to fend for ourselves. Probably a good bit of truth in that, Darlene. Because God knows that and Lysol spray still remains as rare as hen's teeth. I managed to get a little tiny pocket travel-size Lysol spray for the car. That was the first I'd seen in months. Well, thank you, Randy Radar. You go, Bob! We're going. Trying to. Keep going. Of course, 28 days is 4 weeks, and I guess that's technically a month. But I'll feel better when it's like, I don't know, a round number like 38. Or 30, not 38, Jesus. Or 31, a long month. And so that will be, what, Thursday. Yeah, and Shorty in L.A. pointing out the story that I mentioned earlier. GOP got busted in California. Can Horn family say, busted? Those phony GOP ballot drop boxes have appeared in Fresno, Los Angeles, and Orange counties, at places like political party offices, campaign headquarters, and churches. And the GOP, on the other hand, said, yeah, they're ours. And they even defended what they were doing. Well, we got a right to fuck people. Yeah, I saw that over the weekend, too, because there's no lie too big to tell for these fucking maggots. Jeremy says, did you see that this weekend the right was going hog wild to claim the 13 attempted kidnappers were actually left-wing Trump haters? Oh, and that the man who killed Biden's wife and daughter is trying to get Joe to say he wasn't drunk and not at fault? And, of course, I trust everybody saw the Saturday Night Live vice presidential debate fly sketch that opened the program. Jim Carrey as Joe Biden as the fly, which turns into Jeff Goldblum. Yep. So, like I said, I don't know. I just feel kind of flat this evening, and I apologize for that. It's just, happens sometimes, I think. And so now a photograph has gone viral of Nitwit Nero with an umbrella, no mask, getting on Air Force One at Andrews Air Force Base. Surrounded by Secret Service members wearing masks, and him not, even though he could very well be spewing particles all over the place. Dude, you still have an IV bandage on your hand, and they're almost certainly still shedding coronavirus, but go off. He's a bioterrorist. They are bioterrorists. I saw our old buddy, Sean Foyt. He's not our old buddy. He's an asshole. Sean Foyt is back in the news. He went to... He went to Nash Vegas. He did. Sean Foicht tweeted yesterday, A police officer escorting me out tonight said he estimated 9,000 to 10,000 worshippers filled the courthouse steps in downtown Nashville. We had three venue changes and so much resistance, but the church will not be silenced. It's more like the coronavirus will not be silenced, you dumbass, you toxic freak. You theocratic maniac. Yeah, they set up their gig on the steps of the courthouse in Nash Vegas, and there's like drone footage. Thousands of maggots. That's who these are. They're maggots. There's no Biden supporters in that crowd. Good God, fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual maggots, Christians. And they're all hopping up and down. Sean Foicht's hopping up and down. And they're singing about Jesus and putting their hands in the air and rubbing buttholes on belly buttons and belly buttons on buttholes and LARPing and grabulating and smollicking and lollygagging all over each other. Nashville's not a good place to be right now. I got a feeling that tweet is not going to age well. Not at all. The church will not be silenced. So the Nashville Health Department is now at least investigating. It was a worship protest, they're billing it as. Not hardly a mask to be seen. It was a non-permitted event. They didn't apply for a permit to host the event. Metro Nashville Public Health Department says, "We've worked very hard to slow the spread of COVID by taking a measured approach to protect the community. The health department is very concerned by the actions that took place at the event, and we are investigating. We'll pursue appropriate penalties against the organizer." Well, good luck enforcing that. He's from California. That's why he did it in Nashville. That's why he goes to other places. Because he'll be, unless, you know, you extradite, he'll be beyond the reach and can tell Tennessee to just piss off. Police chief in Nashville, John Drake, said there was no communication between Foicht and his cult, and that there were no police officers from MNPD there. "Going forward, the police department will work with its metro government partners, including the health department, to more effectively facilitate proactive contact with any future event organizers to explain Nashville's public health and safety expectations." Well, yeah, that's great, Chief. But, you know, it is your city and you are the police department. Did nobody tell you that there were 10,000 people LARPing and smollicking and grabulating and wallering and lollygagging and puking and spraying and spewing and a barking and a hooting all over each other right there under your nose? Could you not have gone in and broken it up? God knows if that was a Black Lives Matter rally, there'd have been pepper spray and rubber bullets, tear gas. Dr. Alex Jungier leads the Nashville Coronavirus Task Force. He said he didn't know anything about it until this morning. "Anytime there are a lot of people together without masks, I have concerns, and that holds true in this scenario from the pictures I saw online." Good Lord. Did you see people wearing masks? I didn't. That's not helpful. So who shows up for this kind of trash? Well, there's Michaela McKibben. She's 23, and she and her friends come all the way from Chattanooga. Because she follows Sean Foicht on social media. She saw it as an opportunity to express unity and exercise freedom to gather and worship. Yeah, who were you worshiping, Michaela? These events that are being held are considered a worship protest because it's outside. If you want to make up your mind to stand far away or wear a mask, you get to choose. She said they preached racial reconciliation, which is another way of saying, y'all uppity black folks, just get calm down and be quiet, would you? The state of the world is crazy right now. I believe the only way we're going to see healing through this is Jesus. It was a picture of unity. Having an event like last night and making a stand as a church, people are going to see that. I want to be part of that. I wonder how your church is going to feel, and you know, maybe they won't have any objections, Michaela, when you take your commemorative coronavirus that you got at the Sean Foicht super spreader event, and go in there and hug on those older members of your church and say, God bless you, I just love you with all my heart, love your heart. I tell you what, I sure hope you don't get the Rona. By the way, Sean Foicht has referred to Black Lives Matter as a dark movement with hidden agendas. It is unto this end that I have been working my tail off all day with young, diverse leaders around the world to create a pledge that we can sign and post clearly stating what we stand for and what we stand against. Apparently what they stand against is stopping the spread of the coronavirus. Sunday was Nashville. Saturday was Atlanta. He has super spreader events planned for Charleston, South Carolina, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, D.C. And apparently he is untouchable because he hides behind the lace skirts of the First Amendment. Disgusting. Kenneth from Portland with a question. When do we get to the catharsis of 2020, or as I like to call it, the never-ending dystopian nightmare? I doubt Orwell or Dickens, geniuses that they were, could have imagined something so grotesque as this lousy, awful, terrible, misbegotten, fucked up, no good year. It's all so very exhausting. Maybe we'll make it to the other side. Maybe we won't. Who knows? I do know a good start would be to be done with Tangerine Palpatine. So for fuck's sake, everybody vote on November 3rd. The alternative? Well, the alternative is 4 more years of 2020, but way worse. No, no. Please, for the love of Satan, no. Wow. I had not considered it in that light. And that's kind of grim and terrifying, and kind of makes me want to go and hide under the bed. That's a new one, Kenneth. 4 more years of 2020, but way worse. Groundhog Day, the 2020 edition. Damn. That's cold. That's terrifying. Yeah. And that's a good idea, Ralphs. The chat room will, of course. The chat room's always open. It's just that there's seldom anybody in there when the program's not live. But Ralphs says, yeah, leave the chat room open on election night, please. Absolutely. And we can sit and watch and worry and fret. And God, please, God, celebrate. Let us celebrate. Not that God's listening. I remember the night, election night, when Barack Obama was first elected. And how wonderful that felt to be shed of dim leader. Imagine the euphoria, the sense of absolute joy that will attend us if we actually get to kick his orange ass out of the White House. Ugh. Devoutly to be wished. Oh, and from the Hypocrisy on Parade department, a little bit of time travel. Today, as he got his chance to speechify, Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone of Louisiana, otherwise known as John Kennedy, the Oxford-educated lawyer who puts on his bullshit cornpone accent for the rubes down in Louisiana stand. Well, he used his speechifying to piss and moan about the hearing for Brett Kavanaugh. Somehow he just couldn't quite bring himself to talk about Amy Tony's parrot. Which was curious, because back in 2017, when he questioned her, when she was tapped to make the Seventh Circuit Court, an entirely white affair, he asked her about Griswold. I mean, when Griswold came down and you read it, what did you think? Did you say this is a well-reasoned opinion and I agree with it? Of course, you said you're going to follow it. We all follow the law. If you don't follow the law, you go to jail, okay? I will stipulate that, too. But what did you think about the opinion? And, of course, Amy Tony's parents said, well, I wasn't alive when Griswold came down. Well, what about when you first read it? Well, gosh, Senator, I think, again, whatever I might have thought about it, I first read it when I was a law student, but whatever I would have thought about it then or whatever I would think about it today would not matter. I would put that aside in the application of that. And that's when Senator Cornpone cut her off and said, okay, I'm going to move on. I get it. I do not agree with the position you are taking where you will not talk to me about the law, but if that is where you're going to want to do it, that is your call. It is America. It is a free country. But now, her refusal to answer questions about standing Supreme Court precedent. Ay, ay, ay. He's apparently forgotten 2017. But the award, true. Randy in PA says, you can't hide under the bed, Bob. Don't you know there are commies under there? Oh, yeah. Monsters, commies, dust bunnies. Ooh, scary stuff. Caddyshack 2020, says Jimmy. Oh, no. It's in the lumber yard. Jeremy says, I remember when Obama was reelected to his second term, we had a front porch that night as well. Pretty sure we did. Just bring the whole gang in and talk about the election. And a note coming from Mike in Cascadia, mentioning Mike Lee. And Todd in South Carolina Stan had a note for me earlier. Do you know what time is Mike Lee going to be arrested? He's a danger to himself and society. Like Sean Foicht, like Donald Trump, he is a bioterrorist. He is willing to kill. And he's out there doing his dead level best. Mike Lee, Bureau of Land Management, Federal Public Land and Democracy, Mike in Cascadia, says, March 2018, I traveled to Escalante, Utah, to express our disapproval over Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument shrinkage. Bureau of Land Management was hosting a public comment hearing in Escalante. Day of the hearing, my wife and I had lunch in remote Boulder, Utah, at the renowned Hell's Backbone Grill, rated the best restaurant in the Southwest. Ooh, that sounds good. The owners are also great progressives, and they're the vanguard of the protests against the shrinkage of Grand Staircase. So at lunch, an older lady with a young man sat right next to us. Later that day at the meeting in Escalante, she was there. So I asked her if she enjoyed her lunch and said we'd sat right next to her. She introduced herself as Senator Mike Lee's liaison to Southern Utah. She was very nice. Of course she was. And we had a conversation for almost 20 minutes. Even though she was nice, she had a disturbing opinion of federal public land. She said Grand Staircase should be owned by the ranchers. She also told me, a Washington State resident, that I had no business and no right to have any say on any of this land in Utah, even though it's federal public land. She was completely against the very idea of federal public land, and I know her boss, Senator Constitutional Scholar and Meadow Mountain Massacre ancestor Mike Lee, shares that belief. Yes, Lee's ancestor was the ringleader of the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Yeah, look it up. It's a horrifying and shameful part of Utah's history and this country's. Seeing Lee's comments last week on democracy and remembering his liaison's comments on Grand Staircase, I wasn't surprised. Pendley, the legal head of the Bureau of Land Management, neatly closes this undemocratic loop. Federal public land is arguably the ultimate expression of democracy, and these would-be autocrats want to take it all away. And P.S., anyone in remote southern Utah, or I'll add, passing through, check out the Hell's Backbone Grill. I presume they've got a web presence. I have to go and look at the menu. I'm all intrigued now. But, and see, all these things that pass for right-wing judicial and political philosophies, it's just vandalism. It's vandalism with big words, and sometimes not very big ones. And one of these judicial vandals, who likes to pass himself off as yet another intellectual, is, of course, that new and different kind of Republican, Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who publicly embarrassed himself today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Judge Barrett, welcome. Congratulations. Jesse Barrett, congratulations. I just want to say, Senator Klobuchar said a number of things about...
Congratulations, Judge Handmaid, of Jesse, of Donald, of Tony. Congratulations.
COVID that I agree with. She cited a bunch of really painful stories in Minnesota, and similar stories could be told from across the country. I even agree with parts of her criticism of the mismanagement of COVID by Washington, D.C. I don't know what any of that has to do with what we're here to do today. Huge parts of what we're doing in this hearing would be really confusing to eighth graders. If civics classes across the country tuned into this hearing and tried to figure out what we're here to do, and they heard as much as they've heard about 2009 finance committee debates about what should be in a healthcare reform package. I'm blessed to sit not just on the Judiciary Committee, but also on the Finance Committee. And lots of the discussions we've had in here today fit better in a Finance Committee hearing than in a Judiciary Committee hearing. So I think it would be very useful for us to pause.
Well, how nice of Ben Sasse to delineate the proper roles of the various committees and their structures inside the Senate of the United States. But the fact of the matter is, it is relevant. It is more than relevant to point out that they're jamming through a confirmation solely for the purpose of taking health care away from people in the middle of a pandemic. And that's one of the things that's so frustrating in watching these hearings. Nobody really lets their passion carry the day and carry the freight of what this all means to so many millions of Americans. Ben Sasse says that he shares some frustrations with how the government's handled the response to the pandemic. But it's the wrong place to talk about that. The only thing we can talk about today is how sunshine radiates from Amy Tony's parrot and how she gets up every morning and shits ice cream. That's all we can talk about with this religious maniac.
And remind ourselves and do some of our civic duty to eighth graders to help them realize what a president runs for, what a senator runs for, and on the other hand, why Judge Barrett is sitting before us today and what the job is that you're being evaluated for. So if we can back up and do a little bit of eighth grade civics, I think it would benefit us and benefit the watching country and especially watching eighth grade civics classes. So I'd like to distinguish first between civics and politics, because there was a time, the chairman said at the beginning of this hearing, there was a time when people that would be as different as Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she was a heroic woman.
She was. I had a note from Chris in Germany when all this shit was going down. And she said, watching the hearings, fucking Republicans. Watching them praise Ruth Bader Ginsburg while they ram through this mockery of everything she stood and fought for. Watching it is beyond obscene. And that's the truth. It was an obscenity. You know what Potter Stewart said? I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it. I heard this today. I was listening on the radio. And this smarmy notion that somehow this hearing was being held for the benefit of some eighth grade civics. We taught civics in ninth grade down in Alabama back when we taught civics. That's when I had it. But this notion that a hearing that likely will result in the deaths of thousands and thousands more Americans when she gets to do the bidding of her owners. Remember, she's not a free-functioning individual, Amy Tony's parrot. She's a creature. She's a thing that does the bidding of her masters, which is the antithesis of everything that Ruth Bader Ginsburg ever stood for. Freedom, autonomy, choice, true independence. And Amy Coney Barrett is the absolute polar opposite of all of that. Lives hang in the balance. Not that that matters to Ben Sasse of Nebraska. He's a creature too. He's an owned thing too. He lacks as well his own agency. He's got a hand up his back, and it works his mouth when they want his mouth to work. And their names are Coke. And they operate in shadowy super PACs. And they own him. He's a big hollow drum. Can't make any noise by himself. He only makes a noise when he's thumped.
That's absolutely true. And Antonin Scalia, another brilliant mind and your mentor, people that different could both go through the Senate and get confirmation votes of 95 or 98 votes. And the chairman said at the beginning of the hearing, he doesn't know what happened between then and now. I think some of what happened between then and now is we decided to forget what civics are and allow politics to swallow everything. So if I can start, I'd like to just remind us of the distinction between civics and politics. Civics is the stuff we're all supposed to agree on, regardless of our policy views differences. Civics is another way we talk about the rules of the road.
This is a bullshit argument, by the way, in case you're keeping score. Civics and politics are essentially the same thing, expressed in different languages. Civics comes to us from the Latin civitas. Okay? Which is the political life of a community. politics comes to us from the Greek, from the word polis, which means the community, the city-state. They are two words for the same things. They are not two different things. And he argues that we're supposed to all agree on civics. Well, the civics of this nation used to say that only property-owning white males could vote. And we were supposed to agree with that. The civics of this country used to say that people of African ancestry are only 3/5 of a human being. And according to Ben Sasse of Nebraska, that's what we were supposed to all agree on. The civics of this country used to say that the indigenous people who had lived on this land for 10,000 years had no right to possess it because they hadn't improved it. The civics of this country, via the Supreme Court of the United States, used to say, and in this case still does, that it's okay to take land away from indigenous people because they aren't Christians. But Ben Sasse, a new and different kind of Republican, won't tell the Marks, I mean the Rubes, I mean his constituents, that. And so once again, we wind up in one of those places where we go, what the fuck is wrong with the people of Nebraska? Is it something about living in them sod houses that just makes their brains all mushy? I don't know. Lee in New York says, RGB and ACB, Ruth Bader Ginsburg opened doors. Her successor will slam those doors shut. Yeah, it's the double X chromosome equivalent of the difference between Thurgood Marshall and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas. Thurgood Marshall tried to set up the ladder so that others could climb it. And the man who came after him, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas, has spent an entire career stomping on the hands on the rungs of the ladder on the ladder below him. False equivalence. David in South Carolina stands says, how about this MSM bullshit about how Biden won't say whether he will pack the court, as if this is somehow equivalent to 215,000 deaths and 20,000 lives. Yeah. Well, what do we, another meme that, or another trope that's out there is, well, Barack Obama was so lazy, he left a whole bunch of judges unfilled. No, that was Mitch McConnell refusing to give them a hearing, refusing to advance the nominations. But, you know, you got to give it to the Republicans. They're always good for a racist dog whistle here and there, any opportunity they get. Matt in San Francisco. Amazing. It never ceases to amaze me, the unmitigated gall of these Republicans, the way they wax poetic and feign contempt at how unfair the Democratic Party's being, yearning for an earlier time when things were so bipartisan and above reproach. Of course, all the time ignoring all of their own reprehensible behavior and the fact that they're ramming through a cult member that's been nominated so they can hold on to their minority control over the majority. I really hope I can live long enough to see them fall from grace and we can finally move this nation forward. Hear, hear, Matt. Amen. And they are, you know, they really are. They know it. They're in the tar pit. They're slowly sinking. But they're going to bellow every minute of the time that they're still above the tar. Yeah, bipartisan. above reproach. Yearning for the time when America was great and eighth graders understood civics.
Civics 101 is the stuff like Congress writes laws, the executive branch enforces laws, courts apply them. None of that stuff should be different if you're a Republican or a Democrat or a Libertarian or a Green Party member.
Yeah, here's the funny part, though. The courts interpret laws. Huh. Well, in this case, Amy Tony's parrot is being put on the court specifically to remove, to repeal the Affordable Care Act. She is specifically being put on the court as a reliable vote to legislate from the bench and tell 20 million Americans to go fucking die. Because remember, healthcare companies, health insurance companies, are corporations for the most part, some of them eleemosynary and whatever, but they are corporations. And she sides, Amy Tony's parrot does, she sides with corporations something on the order of 79% of the time. Yeah. But here sits Ben Sasse of Nebraska, bloviating about how we're all supposed to agree on, civics is what we all agree on. What a bilious load of horse shit. Do we have to agree that that this country's upper legislative body, the Senate, do we all have to agree that that America is best served by having it be the least democratic institution in the entire government? You tell me.
This is basic civics. Civics is the stuff that all Americans should agree on, like religious liberty is essential. People should be able to fire the folks who write the laws, and the voters can't fire the judges. Judges should be impartial. This is just civics 101. Politics is different. Politics is the stuff that happens underneath civics. Civics is the overarching stuff we as Americans agree in common. Politics is the subordinate, less important stuff that we differ about. Politics is like if I look at my friend Chris Coons and I say, listen up, Jack Wagon, what you want to do on this particular finance committee bill is going to be way...
Oh, he said Jack Wagon. These people...
too expensive and might bankrupt our kids. Or if Chris looks back at me and says, listen up, Jack Wagon, you're too much of a cheapskate and you're underinvesting in the next generation. That's a really important debate. That's a political debate. That's not civics. Civics is more important than that. Civics doesn't change every 18 to 24 months because the electoral winds change and because polling changes. I think it's important that we help our kids understand that politics is the legitimate stuff we fight about, and civics is the places where we pull back and say, wait a minute, we have things that are in common, and before we fight again about politics, let's reaffirm some of our civics. So I'd like to have just sort of a basic grammar of civics for 5 minutes. One thing that we should all agree on, and two things that we should all disagree with. We should agree on it, but one thing that we agree about and are in favor of, and two things that we agree on that we should all reject. First, a positive, grand, unifying truth about America, and that is religious liberty. Religious liberty is the basic idea that how you worship is none of the government's business.
Okay, that as far as it goes. But it's also, while not the government's business, what he's not so good about explaining is that it's also the right of every citizen to be left the fuck alone by religion if they want to. To have religion not in the public square. To have it in the churches where it belongs. To not having the Sean Foyts of the world holding super spreader events trying to get a plague to blaze through downtown Nashville and other parts of Tennessee, including Chattanooga. God damn.
Government can wage wars. Government can write parking tickets, but government cannot save souls. Government's really important. War is important. Parking tickets are important. But your soul is something that the government can't touch. So whether you worship in a mosque or a synagogue or a church, your faith or your lack of faith is none of the government's business. It's your business and your families and your neighbors and all sorts of places where people break bread together and argue. But it's not about power. It's not about force. It's not about the government. This is the fundamental American belief.
Now, see, and that's why I'm a non-believer. Because when he uttered that phrase, a bolt of lightning did not come down out of the sky and fry him to a crisp for the hypocrite liar that he is. Because if there really was, if that great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky really was up there and had some, you know, hard and fast rules, well, that would have gotten him the tender crisp treatment.
First, a positive, grand, unifying truth about America, and that is religious liberty. Religious liberty is the basic idea that how you worship is none of the government's business. Government can wage wars, government can write parking tickets, but government cannot save souls.
Notice here, while he gives passing reference to people who don't believe, notice how everything's predicated on the saving of souls. No one's ever seen a soul. No one's ever measured a soul, heard a soul, touched a soul, smelled a soul. The soul is a concept that we see originally in the ancient cultures of Egypt and then Greece. That's where it arises. But by presuming souls, he himself, as an officer of the government, is advocating a religious position. Because atheists, well, not so much in the soul department. And the fact that he says religion is not the business of government, and he's sitting across from a woman who says that her job as a lawyer is to build the kingdom of God. If we had that as in a translation from the original Farsi from some mullah in Iran, we would talk about what a religious maniac that person was. My job is to build the kingdom of God. Well, why is Amy Tony's parrot any less of a religious maniac than an Iranian mullah when they are saying and believing the same damn thing? This isn't bigotry. There are lots of Catholics on the Supreme Court. Joe Biden, you can't get any more Catholic than Joe. This is about the fundamentalism. This is about the cultish behavior. This is about the regressive nature of the stuff that she believes. That isn't even mainstream Roman Catholic, okay? Let's be clear about that. But they are so nervous. I think the Republicans know what a maniac she is. And they are so nervous about the American people finding out what an extremist she is that they're trying to inoculate the hearings against any Democrat even bringing it up by prejudging anyone as being a religious bigot. For asking, for even thinking about asking her about her bizarre beliefs. Aunt Lee in New York pointing out, hey, my shoes have soles and I've seen them. Roseanne, Rosanna Dana reference.
Government's really important. War is important. Parking tickets are important. But your soul is something that the government can't touch.
Nobody else can either. Because it probably doesn't exist.
So whether you worship in a mosque or a synagogue or a church, your faith or your lack of faith is none of the government's business. It's your business and your families and your neighbors and all sorts of places where people break bread together and argue.
Until you get a Supreme Court justice who wants to build the kingdom of God by making sure that a woman can't make an informed decision with her family or by herself in consultation with her physician. No, then it's a different story, right, Ben Sassy?
Argue. But it's not about power, it's not about force, it's not about the government.
Bullshit!
This is the
lightning bolt!
Fundamental American belief. Religious liberty is one of those five great freedoms clustered in the First Amendment. Religion, speech, press, assembly, and protest. These five freedoms that hang together, that are the basic pre-governmental rights, are sort of civics 101 that we all agree on well before we ever get to anything as relatively inconsequential as tax policy. So civics should be the stuff we affirm together. And contrary to the belief of some activists, religious liberty is not an exception. You don't need the government's permission to have religious liberty. Religious liberty is the default assumption of our entire system. And because religious liberty is the fundamental 101 rule in American life, we don't have religious tests.
You know, it's interesting. You'd almost think that religious liberty was the very basis of the foundation of our government, according to Ben Sassy. On the other hand, however, it's an amendment to the Constitution. When Madison, with some assistance from Hamilton, primarily, Madison, drafted the Constitution, they didn't say a goddamn word about religious liberty. They just put together a document that formed the basis of the framework, the skeletal structure of how the government would work. The three branches, Commerce Clause, things like that. And only when people said, hey, Jimmy, this little dog ain't going to hunt, listen, we got some religious protections in there. Madison did not think the First Amendment needed to even exist. Because in his high-minded view, he didn't think a government of free people would engage in that kind of behavior. He thought we were better than that. So, no, religious liberty is not the core central value, the core tenet of our constitutional system of governance. You could even say it's an afterthought. As are all of the Bill of Rights. They were drafted up, the Bill of Rights were, as a mollification of primarily a bunch of slave owners who were worried that the government might get out of hand and maybe reach down and tell them one of these days that they couldn't own slaves. Our national original sin touches everything. But that's all. That's all beyond Ben Sassy. Isn't there anyone, Matthew in San Francisco asks, isn't there anyone on our side in a safe enough spot to bring this nutcase crazy religion to the surface? Why is everyone tiptoeing around it like it can't be spoken of? This piece alone is driving me crazy. It's not a big stretch to see this woman ruling on the legality of my marriage in the near future. For fuck's sake, this is not about her freedom to practice religion. It's about our rights to not have a religion foisted upon us. Precisely, Matt. But you see, when she was being confirmed for her seat on the circuit court, your senior senator, Dianne Feinstein, said, the dogma lives strongly in this one. And she has been excoriated from that day to this. And every one of those senators knows that if they say something, if a safe senator says something, it will show up in ads for senators who are in close races. And that's why there's a lack of nerve. Because they know they will be pilloried as heathens and atheists and apostates. That's ridiculous. Megan pointing out, ha 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 ha. Let's try this don't ask religious questions approach to a SCOTUS nominee who's a professed witch, or an atheist, or a practicing Muslim. Because Republicans would totally not ask questions and respect that person's right to worship as they please. Right? Right. You can almost, well, one, the witch and the atheist are never going to get nominated. But it's possible in a Democratic administration that in the name of balance, there are Muslim jurists out there. And just to watch the Republicans turn purple and stroke out, nominate a Muslim man or a Muslim woman to the high court. Yeah, you can see how that would play. What about your Sharia law there, Judge? You wanna make us all pray toward Mecca five times a day? Is that what you want, Judge? You and your Sharia law? It's not much of a stretch to imagine that, is it, Megan? Mm-mm. Kyle says, so we should agree that bigotry's okay because civics and religious liberty? Fuck you, Ben Sassy. How about I fire you being a Republican? How's that liberty look then, asshole? I hate these people. Oh, my God, Kyle says, turn off Ben Sassy before I scare the neighbors! I know. This little fallen down house of ours, I am lucky insofar as I'd have to get really, really, really loud before I bothered the neighbors. And then I'd probably have to be yelling over top of them, shooting their guns and running their motorcycles and their coal rolling diesel trucks and shit. Let's run over to the stress line for a minute. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Carl from Western Mass.
Hey, Carl, how you doing?
Good. I was just informed by my 13-year-old son, who is doing on-computer learning, that most of the slaves were white.
Do what?
That most of the slaves before the Civil War were white.
Oh, dear. Somebody's gotten to your 13-year-old, Carl.
No, this is what they're being taught.
In Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts.
Could you do us a favor? Is there a textbook to go with any of this stuff?
Came off the web.
Could you get a screenshot of that or something?
Oh, I will. Could I post it on your... on the horn, on the your Facebook page.
That'd be great.
It's just when he said that, he said, "I can't argue with you because it's on the web. Because this is what they taught me." I'm just like, but they were in. What they mean was indentured servitude. No.
Right. Exactly. That's what I was saying. It's the racist indentured servitude argument. indentured servitude was not the same thing as chattel slavery. The child of an indentured servant was not born a slave. An indenture was a contractual relationship.
Yes, 10 years I'll serve you, blah blah blah. You bring me over to America for 10 years, I'll work for you, and then I'll leave. That wasn't a slave. That was an indentured servant.
Right.
Oh God, it pisses me off. Texas should not. What do you call?
The thing you've got to bear in mind, Carl, is that the only people who bring that information up are people with an agenda that is, generally speaking, a racist agenda.
Yeah.
Trying to delegitimize any arguments over the horrors of slavery.
Yes. Yes. That just pissed me off. Oh, God, when you just told me that. It's almost like Texas in their fucking textbooks are making it to here via the web.
Yeah. It's dangerous.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Are you going to be having a more nuanced conversation with your 13-year-old? Because you can't let that shit just slide by.
I'm going to have to look up something on YouTube with your friend, older friend.
Dr. Bill. Well, I'm looking for something right now because I had it saved for a long time and I don't know what happened to it, but. The myth of Irish slavery, that's largely where it comes from. And so there's a Wikipedia entry, sure. Irish slaves myth. And then an article here. The Irish slave myth has been widely discredited. Claim, Irish people were forced into slavery in British colonies for hundreds of years. Conclusion, this is incorrect. Claiming the Irish experience of indentured servitude with chattel slavery is a misrepresentation of history. But
I'll have to look that one up.
It's been broadly debunked. You can just start out by just look up Irish slave myth.
All right. I think you might get a D on this if he actually listens to something, but it's, I hate them changing history.
I really do. Yeah, it is something that insecure authoritarian regimes do. It's not just white folks. Back before Cortez arrived in Mexico, the Mexica people had not been there that long, and they one of their early leaders completely erased the prior not heroic history of the arrival of the Mexica in the Valley of Mexico and rewrote it as this heroic tale of greatness that every other people around there that had been there longer knew to be false. But it didn't matter to the people of that culture because it was the only information they were given. I think what you can do is if you go and you find all the debunkings of that Irish slavery horse shit, then if they're solid sources with supporting documentation. Your 13-year-old ought not get a bad grade for pointing out that that is simply false. Of course, I guess I'm a bit of an optimist.
I'm hoping to be an optimist too, but given where I'm living and what they're teaching him, kind of giving up.
Well, but you can't. You can't. Because
yes.
what they're pouring in your 13-year-old's mind right now at 13, they're going to build on until he is finished with his high school career. And so you've got to be vigilant about this stuff. And obviously, Carl, you are being. And I applaud you for that.
His school is actually, now, given that he's in doing virtual school, his actual school is a quarter mile away from Mount Holyoke College. Oh, my God.
Well, Kevin just wrote with a question and said, if you get this in time, could you ask Carl from Western Mass if his son is in a private or a public school?
Public.
Oh, public. See,
he's one quarter. He's not even a quarter mile away from Mount Holyoke College. No, oh my God! It's just, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, oh.
Yeah. For instance, Arnold in PA is just screaming right now. They're making the argument that indentured servitude was the exact same thing as chattel slavery. And honestly, Arnold says, I'm sick of it. I can't believe the rewriting of history. Don't forget to hate Whitey. Yeah, people love Wikipedia. Fucking scumbags. I have an Irish friend who thinks it's actually true. He says, you know, the Horn and Rick Smith and Malloy all have the smartest listeners. We're all saying the same shit at the same time. I'd be livid. I absolutely would be, and I question the talents of whoever is teaching this crap, because obviously this person cannot distinguish between propaganda and actual history.
Yes, here he comes on his little. Okay, go.
Say hi to your dog.
Yeah, hi. Yes. All right. Thank you, Bob.
All right, really, Carl. You have a good evening and good luck and great success to your young scholar son.
Well, after his uncle told him over the weekend that Trump is actually a good guy. I don't know. Oh, God.
You know, that's kind of something, one of those places where you sort of have to step in and say, listen, the raising of my children is my job. And you keep your political opinions away from my kid.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
All right, Carl. You have yourself a good evening, my friend.
I keep listening.
All right. All right. Later now.
Bye.
Carl calling from Western Mass. That's a good thing our kids are all grown, because I'd be eating dirt and running rabbits. Anything to try to delegitimize the slavery experience. Kevin says, wow, I'm right near there, West Springfield. I know the school. I figured it out. They had a huge bullying problem there about 5 years ago, made national news. Well, thanks for the background, Kevin. Thank you. And so here we are, almost at the end of the program, a little bit more time for conversation. If you'd like to get in and engage, Arnold said, "Tell Uncle Beauregard the fuck off." Uncle Beauregard, wait a minute. Yeah, it's also being reported. Thank you, David in South Carolina. Stan, unhinged. Trump says he's now immune from coronavirus and ready to kiss anyone in his rally audience.
Because you know you can do that when you're a celebrity. Sometimes you just have to kiss them. You can grab them by the pussy, whatever you want. They let you do that when you're famous.
Damn.
He is a sick bastard, isn't he?
And what I said a minute ago about spreading the lie that lazy layabout, no good, Obama didn't fill 1,500 judicial vacancies. Well, here's the proof. From none other than the Beckerhead. Yeah.
They got into court packing, but here was their spin. Donald Trump has appointed so many lower court judges that he has packed the lower courts. And so many believe that the only way to balance this out is to pack the Supreme Court. So even though Donald Trump, Barack Obama left, what was it, 1,500 judgeships open? It was some ungodly sum that he just didn't care. He just didn't appoint them. So Donald Trump, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, they got together and they have filled all of those. And he's still filling them. That's not packing. That's just not leaving it empty. Your job as president is to appoint judges to lower courts and to the higher court. That's a consequence of an election. Barack Obama left all those judgeships open. I guess he shouldn't have. It was his choice.
Yeah, there's only one problem. That's a lie. Let's start with the fact that there are only 894 federal judgeships. I didn't know it was possible for a radio talk show host to be worse at ciphering than me. But, well, we live in a world that includes the Beckerhead, Glenn Beck, where lazy, shiftless, no account Barack Obama left 1,500 judgeships unfilled out of 890 judgeships that even exist. That's like super double shiftless. That's almost trifling. But just for the sake of the facts, there were 105 vacant judgeships on January the 20th, 2017, when Obama left. Those 105 vacancies were there because Republicans had refused to move on the nominations. The 114th United States Senate confirmed fewer judges than other recent other party predecessors, and they quit confirming them all together way earlier. At least seven of the circuit judgeships, including Amy Toney's Parrott, were vacancies that were there because the Republicans refused to fill them. A woman of color was awaiting confirmation to the seat that Amy Toney's Parrott eventually filled. ...70% of Barack Obama's judicial nominees, according to the Congressional Research Service, 70%, 7 out of 10, 70 out of 100, whatever, 70% of his judicial nominees died in the Senate because they couldn't get a vote, because Moscow Mitch would not allow them to have a vote, because, well, if Barack, you can't let that one, for the, you know, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, you can't let him run around just like filling vacancies like he was five-fifths of a president, when Mitch McConnell, who poses, of course, in front of the Confederate battle flag, know damn good and well that Barack Obama wasn't but three-fifths of a president. Yeah. And Mitch McConnell is damned well proud of what he did, because he knows that in a party that is shrinking day by day, he knows that owning the bench is a way to perpetuate anti-democratic power. Yeah. Sheesh. They don't even try to cover their lies anymore. They just tell them, knowing that very few people will fact check them, and that even when they're fact checked, the fact checks will not get out to the mouth walkers and knuckle breathers who tune in. Because the bubble, well, it's hard to pierce that bubble. And it may be 2020, on the way to 2021, but since 1992, it has been a truism of the Republican Party that you must, and you will do well by and make money doing it, attack Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is not the nominee of the Democratic Party in 2020, but you'd be hard-pressed to know that listening to Coach Dave Daubenmeyer. Remember, he's the guy whose daughters narrowly missed becoming a crew-cut, big-bottomed lesbian softball players because Jesus. Yeah, he's got a plan for Hillary Clinton. It's a loving plan. Yeah, loving. Interesting what passes for love with Dave Daubenmeyer.
Hillary should hang for her hoax from hell. That will put the fear of God back in the swamp. And then I got a link to the story. I do not believe that there's ever been a more corrupt American politician than Hillary Clinton.
Amen, Coach.
Her public life has been one slimy action after another. The demonic left loves her. There's no doubt in my mind that she is under the control of very dark forces, spiritual forces, demonic forces, gates of hell forces. Hillary Clinton's a child of the devil. The greatest example of love is discipline. The greatest example of love is to kill those traitors so others learn never to do it. And why are we so squeamish? Isn't it amazing we just read about men? Why are men today so squeamish to go put a noose around Hillary's neck? Well, hey, let's let her have a trial. Let's let her have a trial. I'm for that. But let's round up that whole cabal. Let's round them up. Let's publicly execute them. So anybody else realizes this ain't ever going to happen again.
And there you go, courtesy of our friends at Right Wing Watch. Can you imagine, say, this program, or Malloy's, or Rick Smith's, Hartman, any of them? Can you imagine if any of us asked where are the courageous men to go and put a noose around the neck of, and what would happen? Now the white wing loves to piss and moan and complain about cancel culture. But Jesus Christ. I mean, should calling for the hanging of a private citizen, how is his video still being allowed on YouTube? And as we get nearer the election, you're going to hear more and more and more of these. Josh Bernstein, another one of these Lulus, he did get deplatformed. Patreon and Roku ditched him. after he engaged in an open call for murder back at the beginning of this month. This is who they are. This is the violence of the fascist right.
Bernstein Show. Here we are. I am firing up the lighting for the studio, and I am putting light on everything that's been going on. First and foremost, I want to thank you all so much for your generosity. My goodness, unbelievable. Thank you so much for helping me throughout these trying times. Just to give you an update, the Patreon page is still suspended. But if you are a patron of my show, I will tell you this. Do not cancel your pledge. There's no reason to. You weren't charged last month, okay? I was shorted out of all of those pledges because it's still suspended. They haven't shut me down completely. It is just suspended. So I'm working through the details of seeing if I can get that back. But here's some other bad news.
Well, so why? Why was he suspended from Patreon? This is why. And I warn you, this is violent, vulgar, hateful, racist.
Welcome to Little Mogadishu. What is Little Mogadishu? Well, it's an area in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that is, and I'll use the word, infested with jihadists and terrorists. That's right, from Somalia. You know, it's amazing. They come to our country and they say they want to, you know, do the right thing and have a better life. But yet, what do? They cause crime. They cause havoc. They're part of the Black Lives Matter movement. They are radicalized. They hate this country. And of course, they are led by the number one terrorist in the United States of America, the one that was selected through massive voter fraud to be a member of the House of Representatives. Of course, I am talking to the notorious towel-headed America and Jew hater, Ilhan Noor Saeed Elmi. I believe that the FBI and the Department of Justice should charge Ilhan Noor Saeed Elmi with sedition, treason, marriage fraud, voter fraud, illegal campaign contributions, immigration fraud, and aiding and abetting our enemies. She is a worthless pile of shit. Okay? Let me be as clear as I can, Right Wing Watch. All right? She should be arrested, tried, and I know your favorite word, Right Wing Watch. What's your favorite word? How many articles have you written about me when I've used this word? The E word? That's right. This bitch should be executed. There it is. I said it once again.
Yeah, and he means it. They are a bloodthirsty lot. And it got him pulled from Roku and Patreon. But he's still out there. She is a sitting oath-sworn member of Congress. And he is calling for her murder. Jesus. And it's only going to get worse as we get nearer and nearer the election. And if we manage to beat Nitwit Nero, they are probably going to go hog ass wild. But we cannot let that deter us from our goal and our mission. And that is to save this republic, what's left of it, and put ourselves in a position of beginning to right oh so many wrongs. Wait a minute. Cowbell from Matt in San Francisco. Love. The greatest example of love is discipline. I bet Coach Dave's monthly dominatrix expenses is a couple of thousand bucks. Easy. Who's been a bad coach? Sure. Why the hell not? Yeah, you know, Dave's a weird one. Let's run back over to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
It's Jude.
Hey, Jude, how are you, dear?
Well, I wanted to kind of honor Juanita a little bit more.
I think that's a good idea. I didn't have too many facts, and I was hoping I would hear more from you.
Yeah, it was, Kevin called earlier, which was really good to be able to talk to him, and, you know, I'll pass his condolences when I talk to Juanita tonight, but I got a call, I think it was Saturday evening, and, you know, Bob, the minute she said, Jude, I had this sense that it was ominous. And I didn't know because I never get that from Juanita.
You could, you know, I you met could, her through you. Could, yeah, you could hear the pain. You could hear the pain and the grief in her voice already.
Oh, and she just started wailing, just from the depths of her being. And I said, Juanita, and she goes, "My baby, my best friend. He's dead, Jude. He's dead." And so I sat, and then I started, you know, weeping with her. And then when she brought up that, you know, he had been burned in that fire. And it was the neighbors that had awakened her. She didn't even know. She's lucky that she didn't die also, because the little place that he was living was right behind her. And the neighbors came and knocked and knocked and knocked, and she got up, and she wasn't even aware that there was smoke in the house. So they said, "You've got to get out. Your house is on fire." And when I spoke with her yesterday, she said that what's left of her house is the front porch, if I heard her correctly. And there's a long hallway that kind of led back to her room, and all the periphery of it was burned.
How did it happen, Jude?
Well, they're not sure yet. Kevin was kind enough to kind of explore different things. He had reminded me, you know, about, you know, the fire department doing all of that. And whether or not, I don't know how close the buildings were, but to have both of them. So they ended up taking her. And then she had to say to them when she's outside in her yard, she says, "My son's in the back, my son." And I guess they ran back. And she's, you know, she has neuropathy in her legs. And she's had so many, you know, things going on that it's hard for her to get around. And they went back, but the place was completely, you know, engulfed by then. So they had, you know, she wanted to know what had happened. And she doesn't remember a lot, but they had to, she was in the hospital for 2 days because her O2 sat was so low. And in that whole process, because her grief was so, you know, in all my years of hospice, the most difficult, they're all painful, but the most difficult was when a parent lost a child. And a lot of the children, you know, were little ones going through cancer therapy that we took care of. But even older, you know, older people, it just ripped, you know, a portion of one that sometimes can never be, you know, replaced or refilled. But when she was grieving the most, she had one nurse that would come in and sit with her and at times would cry with her, and then finally shared that her husband and daughter had been killed in some kind of accident. And she said what she learned from that is that her life changed in so many ways, that she found a focus. And in the midst of that first night talking with Juanita, about an hour and a half, she goes, "You know, I realize now that I'm saved to do something." And she says, "I have an odd strength in that." She says, "There is a purpose to my life." And then she, you know, she'd break down again. She says, "But Charles," and she said, "to know how, you know, how he died." And the very important news is that Charles' best friend, Bill, found out and went up to the hospital, and she came back to his house, and he has her there. He's got a room with her own bathroom and set up a television, and she's like with nothing, you know, but she's formulating. She's thinking about maybe getting a little trailer, and because I was telling, you know, I told Kevin, I said, "Gosh, you know, if she didn't have anybody, I'd have to bring her here. I couldn't just leave." And I've never met Juanita.
Right.
But I've known her through you since 2007, and we have developed the most endearing, honest, you know, friendship and sisterhood. But then when I was on hold waiting, and then I'm listening to that all that vomit come out of that fellow, I thought about Todd and the limbic system and my, everything started, and I thought, please don't let me do another horn chat with Bob with my emotions and, you know, not being able to control, you know, my tone. And but I just fell back into it and thought, well, it's going to be what it's going to be, because it hurts so much to know that someone's had such, you know, such tragedy.
When I got your email, I didn't know. I mean, I was just immediately floored.
I know. There's nothing really to write back. It just, I mean, you've known her for so much longer, even though she hasn't called in for, you know, quite some time.
You know, she tried to call in a couple of months back when I was having troubles with the phone system, the very night. Mm-hmm. And I was having internet troubles and phone troubles, and it just worked out that way. But, oh, send her our love, will you please?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He's had chronic lung condition for a long, long time, and because of the weather there, it's been real compromised. And then he also had severe sleep apnea, and had finally got into a physician that was starting to work with him. And Juanita was so relieved, because people that we love, when they're going through things, you know, we experience them somewhere within inside our own vessels, because
yes,
they're so close in our heart connection. And so she brought that up, and she said, I called. She said, I thought about that doctor, because he was so kind to Charles, and Charles had such a sense of hope. And when she talked to the receptionist even broke down and shared sympathy with her being vulnerable and crying, and that meant a tremendous amount, you know, to Juanita. So that's kind of, but I'll be talking to her in a little bit, you know. Thank you for, you know, letting me talk about it.
I'm
sure other people are impacted. You know, I'm sure there's other Horn members that remember Juanita and probably felt a twinge or an aching when they heard that, because I don't know, you know, how one could not.
I told Agnes, and she was just devastated.
Yeah, because Juanita's always had that close connection with Ferg, and had,
yeah,
you know, Juanita was in the hospital a couple years ago, and I can't remember I don't know if it was respiratory or what, and Charles had called, and we had a long talk and explained what was going on and gave me the phone number, and within a couple of days, she calls back. It's like 11 o'clock at night. She had some verbal abuse going on, and so I had to help facilitate getting her out of that nursing home. In fact, I actually reported it to the board of nursing homes, and they came in and did a survey on them.
I remember that incident.
Yeah. But through that, I got to know Charles, you know, and he had the most wonderful quality of voice. It was soothing, and, you know, he was reflective, and he was a good listener, along with being able to share. So that's kind of what I, you know, these past couple of days, what I held on to. And the beauty of it, on Saturday, she said that she actually could hear Charles. She said he came by to say, Mom, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful, and I can breathe. And he said, I don't want you to worry. And, you know, if people embrace that in the ether of their own consciousness, or if something does transcend the veil, doesn't make any difference. It gave her such a sense of kind of a pure connection.
Yes.
And a line. Yeah. So that's kind of a private thing, but heck, it's just to the family out there. So families are good about being able to hold on to private things.
Well, I don't know how she's going to begin to handle it. So much loss, so much, so much grief, so much horror.
A day at a time, yeah. And sometimes a minute at a time, you know. But
sometimes you measure it in seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where we were on Saturday night. So, anyway, hopefully that will take the vile putrid of that fellow that you had on and shift it into a place of compassion and love, the real kind of love that nature
Yeah, you know, compassion is not difficult. I never cease to wonder why people like these monstrosities that I've just run audio from, you know, why do they want that to be their lives?
Well, I often wonder what their childhood was like, you know, how it's formulating.
True.
I mean, some people, you know, I worked, before I went into nursing, I was with an organization that dealt with family members that were court ordered because of abuse towards their children. And I had, you know, several mothers, and sometimes I get a call at 2 a.m. and I'd have to go up and, because they were on the verge of, you know, beating their baby or their toddler again. And then it was a panel for family living, and I learned so much about all of that. And people that even don't specifically study it or actually are part of it, we know how devastating it is. And I always go back to, like, when I was down in Portland, you know, the trail end of the Proud Boys, you know, just, you look at them and you wonder, there's some kind of odd mutations. And I often think, what happened to you to make you so vengeful and so hateful and so closed off, you know, so closed off. And with that, I'll bid you farewell.
Well, Jude, thank you very much, dear. I'm glad you called in. I appreciate the information. Again, just tell Juanita that I hope she knows that she is loved.
And I will, and I can feel it.
And that the depth of the caring and concern of this community goes to her. One of the worst things about things like this is the feeling of powerlessness that engulfs us when they happen. Mm-hmm. But in those moments when we join together to care, we can push back against that sense of powerlessness.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I talked to you before about power versus force,
yes,
align in that. And I think intentions, it's like when you're thinking about somebody and they call, there's a certain kind of connection that goes on. And she will feel that from all those that send it to her. I truly believe that.
Well,
all right.
Well, thank you, Jude.
And please
keep us updated. And if she needs to, reach out to me, tell her she's free to.
I will.
Okay.
Okay, dear heart. Take care.
Thank you, Jude. Have a good evening. Thanks for doing for Juanita what you're doing. Bye.
Oh, well, we do it together.
Here.
Bye.
And there is, Jude has a, well, what was the, I guess the name they gave Gandhi was, you know, Mahatma, and it means great soul. And Jude has a wonderful, kind, giving, outreaching, outpouring spirit, soul, whatever word we want to use. It's a force for, hers is a force for good. Tom in sunny San Rafael says, I'm so sorry to hear about Juanita and Charles. I always loved hearing Juanita's calls way back in the old days. Me too. We had some dandies too, didn't we? Thank you, Tom. Thank you. So I think we'll just knock off here and call it an evening. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who have chipped in this evening to finish the fundraising goal. Thank you to Ryan for his half a show on me over the weekend that made it as easy as it was tonight. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Jack. And thank you, Jude. Thank you all. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air through your kind contributions, your a la cartes, your subscriptions via Patreon and PayPal. Thank you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Yours truly filling in. So stick around headon.live for that. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. I did get a message from Ben. He's going to be looking into what I did to screw up the Horn archive. Hopefully that'll be squared away in short order. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Please, please stay home if you can, as much as you can. If you have to be out and about, wear your mask, wear your gloves, wash your hands, carry some sanitizer with you at all times. Maintain your social distance, 16 feet, not any six. Or more, if possible. And if somebody comes at you telling you to read Rule 5.20, get that Biden and Harris shit off the lawn, avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.